Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We all saw in the last few days, we talked a bit about it yesterday, the stabbings that took place in Minnesota, the potential bombs and bombs that took place in New York and New Jersey. And we've heard a lot about from certain sources in our country about stopping immigration, about investigating Muslim communities. But what we need to hear is from the communities themselves, why this is going on, what it means, how big or how small is it, what it says about what we mean, what the political debate in America, and how we really have to broaden that discussion in this country. Before we hear from our guests, and I want to introduce them to you all in a minute, from various communities in this country, I want to play a tape. This is a tape of the response from one of the presidential candidates, Donald Trump, on the heels of what happened in New York City, New Jersey, and Minnesota. Then we'll come back and talk with our guests.
More terror strikes?
Yeah, because we've been weak. Our country's been weak. We're letting people in by the thousands and tens of thousands. I've been saying you got to stop it. Just last week, Obama said more than 100,000 people are going to come in from Syria. He's letting more people in. 100,000. Hillary Clinton wants to increase what he's let in. He's let in thousands and thousands of people. They don't know. They can't be properly vetted. There's no way. I spoke to law enforcement, the best people in law enforcement. They say there's no way of vetting these people. So he let in over 100,000 additional people. And now Hillary Clinton is raising it by 550%. And this has been going on for a long time. Thousands of people are pouring into our country. We have no idea what we're doing. Our leaders are, I don't even say weak, I say stupid.
Well, Hillary.
That was a part of what Donald Trump had to say on Fox News the other morning. And we're going to kind of wrestle with that in light of this real divide in America and what it says to the Muslim communities in our country. Of course, he said one of the things he said in there was 100,000 people were let in, alluding to, quote unquote, Muslim refugees in America. Actually, it's 10,000. But then he's always a little light with the facts. But let's meet our guests. Fahima Ghiz is with us. She's director of the Afghan Women's Fund. And earlier in the century, spent a great deal of time on this program as we talked about the war in Afghanistan and more. Fahima, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Mansoor Shams is with us, who is on the executive team of the Amiyada Muslim community here in Baltimore. He's a Marine veteran and runs the website MuslimMarine.org. And Mansoor, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
And Zainab Chowdhury is with us, Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And Zainab, welcome back. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can send us an email to talk@steinershow.org or log on to our Facebook pages. But do join us. I want to hear your thoughts about this and where this is going. But Zainab, let me begin with you, and I'm glad you could join us once again. The Donald Trump quote piece that we just played, we have a country who is, A, very divided politically. B, part of that divide has to do with this kind of anti-Muslim rhetoric and flare and flame that's going on in this country. I think it's in some ways it's more widespread than that as well. Maybe not as deep as on one side, but as wide, but widespread. So, what do you do in response to that?
You know, Mark, unfortunately, this particular political climate has been one of the most vitriolic, if not the most vitriolic, against Muslims than ever in recent history. We've been seeing an unprecedented spike in anti-Muslim inflammatory rhetoric that really targets and undermines Muslim communities across the country and really globally. We know that the migrant crisis in Europe, incidents like that, the advent of terrorist organizations like ISIS and the platform that they've been given in national media and international media and rhetoric from political pundits and candidates running for public office have helped to cultivate this kind of resentment or hysteria against Muslims. And unfortunately, whenever we see terrorist attacks happen or incidents happen where the perpetrators are Muslim or happen to be Muslim or claim to be Muslim or seem to be Muslim, those kind of incidents are completely sensationalized. The way that they're reported in the media specifically, it really serves to for some of the fear and concerns that especially the vast majority of Americans who don't have a very good grasp of who Muslims are and what we believe, it underscores some of their fears and their concerns about Muslims. And it's frightening to see someone like Donald Trump, who is a front-runner candidate for the highest office in the land, capitalizing on these kind of tragedies, these kind of situations that should bring all of America together and unite us to, you know, defeat the forces that are trying to divide us and harm us. It's frightening to see someone like him capitalize on it to push his own platform forward, to push his own agenda forward. It's really irresponsible, and it shows that under a Donald Trump presidency, we can expect to see more of the division and polarization that we've seen during this election cycle.
And Mansoor Shams, again, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us here. You are a Marine Corps veteran, and some of this inflammatory rhetoric was given more fuel when Donald Trump spoke at the Republican National Convention where he was nominated, and his attacks on Humayun Khan and his family, another Muslim American who is a veteran of the wars of Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't know how you feel about those wars. He was a veteran of those wars. So could you pick up on that theme?
Right. Again, thank you for having me today. You know, of course, for someone like myself who served in the United States Marine Corps, some of the comments that actually, not just some, but all of the comments that come out of the mouth of Donald Trump, hit a chord within me because, you know, in my particular case, and of course, in the case of Humayun Khan, who gave the ultimate sacrifice, far greater than my sacrifice, my sacrifice was that I signed on the dotted line saying that I pretty much give my life to this country, the country that I call home, the country that I love. So when Donald Trump speaks of, you know, Muslims, banning Muslims from this country, forgetting that Muslims have been a part of this country since the beginning of this country. It goes back to the days of George Washington, where Muslims have been a part of the American fabric for years on end. And today, where we should be standing next to, you know, the 1%, less than 1%, because in my opinion, currently what's happening is like, it's a form of bullying. This is something that, you know, we talk about in schools that, you know, this is something we need to take a stand against. But how is it that we're 99% of the population, and I'm not, of course, saying all of it, minority of that population, but still a large population where they come out and they start talking about Muslims, and there's a front-runner presidential candidate who is just maybe 2 months away from potentially winning, the White House. And they come out and they say these sorts of things. It's a pretty tough thing. You know, you feel almost like you're being bullied in the country that you are something that you've defended and you've shown with your uniform.
Fahima Ghaiz, welcome, Ghaiz. Well, good to have you back with us again as well. It's been a long time. So would you like to pick up on just that theme in terms of, especially since one of the people accused in the last few days was also an Afghan-American?
Yes, Mark, I couldn't hear Zina, but I just want to add to what the gentleman said. The Muslim community in this country contribute to the American culture and to the American way of life and to the United States like other communities. And the problem is not that we have to restrict immigration on Muslims or this group and that group. The problem is that we have to change our foreign policy. We have to change our policy abroad. And the ongoing war and the attack on people abroad and the attack on people in the country does not solve the problem. Actually, it adds to the problem. So what Donald Trump is saying, of course, it's a hateful speech which breeds more hate, and that is not the solution.
So, well, let's tackle all this for a moment. I mean, one of the things about what Zainab just said, what Fahima just said, Zainab, And I'd like all of you to kind of chime in on this. One of the things that we talked about in this program, several years back, through friends of ours in who are very close to the Somali-American community, to the Somalian-Kenyan-American community, more specifically, was that they, both in Canada and here, that they felt that there was pressure on certain segments of their young population to turn closer to the more fundamentalist groups who are advocating violence, and that element does exist. I mean, we make it sometimes in Donald Trump's world into the entire Muslim community, but that does exist. So I just want to come around to all things you've just said, everybody just said here. But Zainab, could you talk a bit about that? Because I mean, isn't that also a reality?
So, Mark, I think it's important to point out that in every ethnic group, in every religious group, there are bad apples. The vast majority of our nation's 6 million Muslims, or however many Muslims, depending on which study or which report the vast majority of the Muslims in the United States want the exact same thing that all other Americans want, and that's the safety and security of our nation. When we first learned of the attacks over the weekend, the bombings over the weekend, even before we had any information about who the perpetrator was, what his identity was, what his religion was, we saw national Muslim organizations putting out calls urging for the cooperation with authorities, urging our communities to come forward with any information and to work with law enforcement agencies to make sure that whoever is behind it is apprehended. And that's something that, you know, regardless of which Muslim organization, national Muslim organization we speak with, we'll see that common thread that we encourage our communities to come forward with any information that could possibly, even possibly, endanger the safety and security of anybody, you know, in the United States or beyond. That said, it's important to not profile the entire faith community. Unfortunately, what we see is a tendency in the aftermath of these kind of events to paint the entire community, the entire religious community, with the same broad brushstrokes, and to categorically demonize and vilify all Muslims based on the actions of one or two individuals who do not represent the religion of Islam. And Muslims are the only faith group where we see this tendency. When Dylann Roof shot up a black church in North Carolina, he killed 9 people in cold blood. People whose children were named Dylann did not worry about whether to send their sons to school the next day. Little boys named Dylann did not have to worry about being targeted or harassed or bullied because of their name or because of the fact that the perpetrator in that crime was a white male, a white Christian male. And there's this double standard that we see, that whenever the perpetrator in an attack is Muslim or Arab, or appears to be Muslim or Arab, or of Afghan ethnicity or of any ethnicity that is linked to Muslims, there's this kind of tendency to paint the entire faith community with the same broad brushstroke, and we have to be careful not to do that.
So, go ahead, Mansour. You about to say something?
Right. So, in the beginning of the show, I noticed that, you know, one of the questions that you asked is, like, why is this happening? And I think a lot of us tend to live in some other reality, and often what I find with some of our fellow Americans is that we, and perhaps this is a conversation that maybe everybody wouldn't have, but I'm a pretty honest, sort of sincere sort of guy. So I say things that are in my mind and my heart, and I'm not sure if I should or not, but I do it. But, you know, I can't change that about me, you know. But the thing is that, you know, we have to take a moment to step back. And I think what sometimes fellow Americans seem to often forget is, you know, why, or ask why this is happening, and actually forget why this is happening. You know, I want you to, you know, understand for a second, or paint a picture in your head where you're sitting down with your family and a bomb blows you up, or you blow your family up, okay? Your wife, sister, brother, son, daughter gets annihilated right in front of you, okay? And you're barely walking yourself. Okay, now take that times 100, times 1,000, take hundreds of thousands, and you have a huge problem. You have a, you know, I imagine that happening here. And I think that when we, you know, I believe in, you know, regardless of whatever religious affiliation that you have, I think we've heard this saying, what goes around comes around. And I have this my belief that there's no way that the country that I love, the United States of America, okay, does not matter. That's included. That you cannot go murder hundreds of thousands of people in a country like Iraq and not expect any repercussion. It just doesn't work like that. You cannot just say, oops, we made a mistake, no weapons of mass destruction, we're out of here. It just doesn't work like that. So you, people like yourself, people like myself, people like Zainab, whoever's here, we have to pay the price now, okay? So if I'm in a mall right now, that guy who's whatever reason he has or whatever he wants to do, he doesn't care at that moment whether there's a Muslim in there, okay, or whether you're in there, whether we're all going down. That's what's happening. So this whole idea, I
would just like to interject.
Let me just jump right back in, Zainab. Let Mansour finish his thought, but do jump right back in, Mansour.
Right. So my only point is that, you know, there is a reality that we must face, which is that, you know, we have been, you know, responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people overseas. And now I feel like what's happening is they say that ISIS is coming or ISIS is here. ISIS is probably here. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked. But obviously we can't paint, you know, an entire Muslim community of 1.6 billion plus with a broad brush. It's not my fault. I'm a Muslim Marine, for God's sakes, right? So what do I have to do with ISIS? But the reality is, because of what's happened over there, we have to also pay the price, and that we're going to pay the price no matter what. And unfortunately, what's going to happen is it's possible that someone like myself may be walking around in a mall and also get blasted and, you know, go down without other people. But, you know, the entire picture is going to be about a Muslim. This is not about a Muslim. This is something much greater, and I think something that we need to come in touch with.
Can I add something to this?
Zainab was trying to break in. Let me, Zainab, have her piece, and then we'll come right back to you, Fahima. Zainab?
I just wanted to make a point, Mark, that we've seen in recent months unprecedented level of Islamophobia in the United States. And we've seen historically, whether it's the United States, whether it's Australia, whether it's Europe, communities that have been systematically disenfranchised are more likely to engage in acts of terror. Communities that are impoverished, that are disenfranchised, that do not have access to resources, that have been shunned by their government, that have been dehumanized, those are the communities that are more likely to engage in these kinds of acts of terror. And it stems from a place of desperation. It stems from a place of frustration, of feeling marginalized, of feeling disenfranchised. And I think in order for us to really understand why these attacks are happening and what's compelling them to happen, I think it's important to understand the psychology of the people who are behind it. Many of these people, they are not people, in the cases where the perpetrators are Muslim, they are not people who go to mosques 5 times a day. They are not people who pray 5 times a day. They are not people who fast in the month of Ramadan, or they're not people who would be considered to be religious, pious Muslims, is what I'm trying to get at. This particular suspect in New York, New Jersey, the Afghani American man, he was found sprawled in a bar outside of a bar by somebody who called the authorities and notified them that he was there. Many of the people who engage in these acts of terror, they're not individuals who have a firm grasp of the religion of Islam. So it's a mistake to correlate their actions with the religion of 1.5 billion people. But I think that it is important to analyze our own foreign policy and figure out what mistakes we've made, our government has made, that have contributed to this kind of increasing sense that, you know, that some Muslims feel that they don't have a place here, or not even just Muslims, but I think overall. Because the reality is if we look at the hard facts, Americans are more likely to be killed by a piece of furniture or by walking across the street. Or, I mean, the likelihood that an American would be killed in a terrorist attack perpetrated by a Muslim is a very tiny, tiny probability. And the possibility of that individual being a refugee is even more tiny. And so to hear Donald Trump say things like refugees are a national security threat, and the vetting process is not accurate, or it's not thorough or comprehensive enough, I think it just shows his own ignorance. It shows that he really has no idea about the vetting process and what it entails. It's one of the most thorough processes of any process in order that allows refugees to enter the country.
So what were you about to say, Fahima?
I was going to say that we often validate the feeling of Americans rightfully accept their backlash and their reaction to any violence or anything that happens here. But, you know, we do not validate the feeling of others. You know, although I don't condone violence at all, but I just want people to understand that someone relative, someone neighbor, someone friend get killed or got killed, and that person just reacts to it. You know, you probably heard that just a couple of days ago, seven Afghan policemen got killed by the U.S. bombing. They have tons and tons of relatives there. Somebody will react to it, but we do not validate their feeling. We do not feel their pain at all. You know, war does bring the worst out of you. And, you know, we go around and bomb a country. We go around and invade countries, but we do not, when there is a reaction to our invasion, there is a reaction to our violence, our government violence, our military violence, we do not accept that. We do not understand that. And I just want people to understand that it is just reaction, although I do not condone it.
So, I mean, I'm trying to piece together what the three of you just said. And also, let me encourage our listeners here to please join in at 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts and ideas on this question about our brother and sister Muslims in America, about the attacks that just happened, about what our response should be, about what comes out of the campaign of people like Donald Trump. It's a complex issue. It's a real issue. We want to hear your ideas at 410-319-8888. Or you can email us at talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner. But please do join us, 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts and ideas. I mean, so just trying to pull together these kind of these ideas. I mean, A, it seems to me that there is no excuse for, nor can we tolerate Islamophobia or the anti-Muslim sentiment or anti-Arab or anti-Middle Eastern sentiment that's taking the sentiment that's taking place in large sections of our country and throughout Europe as well, I might add. It's real, it's deep, and it's there. How you confront that is one issue in terms of how a nation addresses that within its own borders. The other is part of the reality, I think, that all of you touched on, that especially Fahima and Mansoor touched on, which is that the foreign policy of America, the foreign policy of the West, has meant that for the last 15 years or more, our countries have been engaged in a war against countries whose population is majority Muslim, and what that has created. At the same time, you've got places like Saudi Arabia and others that fuel that kind of fundamentalist terror that takes place in those countries. And we also support Saudi Arabia. So, I mean, it's a complex and there's always been this kind of historic tension for thousands of years between Christians and Muslims in our world. And there's also just been the opposite in many communities in Baghdad and in the Kurdish areas in Damascus and Cairo, where people have lived side by side in peace. So it's a complex piece to kind of parse out here. And I think that that's part of the problem, Zainab. It's not simply just a question of discrimination against Muslims in America. That's a piece of it, or the Islamophobia. But it's a very complex issue.
It is, absolutely, Mark. And I think that many Americans, the vast majority of Americans, don't have a firm grasp of all of the different issues that come into play. Unfortunately, we tend to regurgitate what we're spoon-fed by the media or what we read in an article online, and then we tend to take that as fact without analyzing all of the different factors or all of the different parts of the equation that come into play, and we don't get the full picture of what's at play or what's at stake here. But regardless, just like Islamophobia or the marginalization of any religious community or any faith community, ethnic community cannot be tolerated, we also cannot tolerate violent extremism. And I think it's important to understand that we will not be able to eradicate violent extremism by unfairly profiling or targeting any one faith community or any one ethnic community or by painting the entire community with a broad brush. The most effective way to keep our country safe is for us to stand united, for us to stand united against the divisive forces that are trying to pit Americans against one another, and to hold our elected officials accountable to make sure that policies, whether they be domestic or foreign policies, they're not unfairly marginalizing any community across the globe. Because unfortunately, the reality is that our foreign policy has negatively impacted and murdered so many people around the globe, and we do have enemies. There are many people around the world who just hate the United States of America because of the unfair policies that our country has engaged in. And that's something that we have to take into account when we figure out how do we keep our country safe. And part of that equation, part of that answer, is to hold our elected officials accountable and make sure that policies that they're constructing are fair and equitable to other minority communities in other countries as well.
So we do have to get a short break. We're going to come right back. You just heard Zainab Chowdhury, who is Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American Islamic Relations. We'll come back and hear thoughts from Mansoor Shams, who is part of the executive team of the Amiada Muslim community here in Baltimore and a Marine Corps veteran, and Fahima Khayiz, who is Director of Afghan Women's Fund, and you at 410-319-8888. We'll come back to the comments from Brenda and Randy and the others who are calling in. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. As we look at the attacks that happened over the last several days, the arrest of one man in New York City, the death of another in Minnesota, we look at reactions to this not in terms of our quote-unquote war on terror, but from the eyes, ears, and feelings and thoughts of the Muslim community in America. Fahima Ghiz joins us. She is director of the Afghan Women's Fund. Mansoor Shams joins us. He is on the executive team of the Amiada Muslim community in Baltimore, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and runs the website MuslimMarine.org. And Zainab Chowdhury, who is Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American Islamic Relations. And you all at 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones. And Brenda, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I don't know how you expect any government to pick out who's dangerous and who's not. It only seems logical to me, not that I'm prejudiced, but that to restrict the incoming ones so that we have some control over. I mean, they don't care who they kill, whether they're Muslims or Christians or anything. So I don't understand why you would even think policy would have effect on these people at all. I don't understand that. Or why we give so much government, so much money to their governments, which have plenty of money. They just don't share with their poor people. They're just questions in my mind.
So tell me what those questions lead you.
Well, something's not right if you don't share and you restrict agencies to come in and help your own people. I don't understand why they want so much control over and make people unhappy. And then they have something like people going out the bomb because they don't have food or they don't have enough to live on.
So are you suggesting that what we should do is restrict people coming in from Muslim countries into America? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's only logical. I mean, that you would question them and find out who they are. Yeah, I think that's the way to go, because a policy, even if we change policies, I don't think it's going to change their mind, ideological, however they think. I don't even know how to say it, but...
No, it has got... Let our guest respond. Mansoor, do you want to take a first stab at that?
Yeah, sure. I'm a bit shocked, but okay, fine. I mean, I'm going to respect someone's opinion, that's all right, you know. I come from a country known as Pakistan, and Pakistan is in the news often. I'm not a terrorist. I'm a proud Muslim. I'm a proud American. I'm a proud United States Marine. So if we go with that sort of mindset, I think we'd have, we'd be losing out on a lot of benefits for this country. At the same time, again, as earlier, I think Zainab mentioned, this whole concept that somehow processes aren't already in place processes all are already in place. It is not easy to come to the United States, let alone even get a visa to the United States of America. There is a process in place. Now, what you cannot do, or what anyone cannot do, is go and find out who the Dylann Roofs are. We don't know who that is. We don't know if somebody wakes up tomorrow and takes a gun and starts going and, you know, to a mall and starts shooting people. We don't know who that is. Whether that happens to be a Muslim, whether that happens to be a Christian or a Jew, we can't control that. So to segment one entire population of 1.6 billion plus people we're talking about, okay, 1.6 billion plus people, it's, you know, and to say that perhaps we need to start restricting these people, it's sort of insane. It's kind of crazy. It's the definition of bigotry.
Fahima?
Well, I said it earlier, and I will say it again, that by restricting people to come to this country, we would not solve the problem. We are everywhere. The U.S. Military is everywhere. We are like in 130 countries. We have over 800 bases all over the world. We cannot restrict people from coming here, just like the world cannot restrict us from going there. You know, we have to find another way. What that way is that to change our foreign policy. And I cannot emphasize enough that by going around and invading other countries, and, you know, Mark, you also touched on something that I wanted to talk about it very badly. It is the Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia right now is bombing Yemen. Saudi Arabia is funding all the madrasas in Pakistan and funding ISIS in all the fundamentalist groups, and have been doing it for the past 40 years. But we are, in Saudi Arabia is in our allies, who is the government of Pakistan. But we go and attack another third world country, another weak country, and then we breed more terrorism. You know, we have to deny terrorism the opportunity. We have to do not fertilize terrorism. And that is our foreign policy has to change. We have to live in peace with the world. It's just because we want to dominate the world, and, you know, when they react to us, then we say, oh, restrict them, do not allow them to come to this country, which does not work that way. The world has changed completely, and we cannot, you know, close all our borders to everybody. And besides, it's not the Muslim. You know that in this country, there is attack every day. Nobody says that, oh, their background is Christian or Jewish or this religion and that religion. As soon as a Muslim does something, then, you know, we talk about their religion. Or we never talk about the birthplace of any attacker. But if it is a Muslim, then we talk about it, oh, Afghanistan or Pakistan or this country and that country. You know, criminals are everywhere, and terrorists can be in every religion and every community. We should not be attacking their community or their country of birth or their religion.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to go to Zainab. What were you about to say, Mansoor? Then I'll go to Zainab and go back to the phones.
All I wanted to say is that on the other side of things, look, I understand there's some legitimate concerns, you know, and, you know, I get that, you know, but our approach has to be more synchronized. Now, just to make a point here, I think it's important for people to know that as far as myself, as part of the Ahmadiyya Muslim community and the Khalifa of Islam, His Holiness Mirza Masroor Ahmad, he's, you know, on live on BBC television. He said that, you know, if you feel like that you need to monitor mosque, come and monitor the mosque. If you feel that there's a threat there, go monitor those mosques. There's nothing wrong with that. So as far as, you know, I'm concerned, look, you know, when I get checked, you know, I just flew into Florida yesterday. When I get checked at an airport line and they go through, you know, some extensive checking. Now, I'll be very honest. In my case, I very rarely get the extensive checking, okay? But when I've had the extensive checking, go for it. Because if there is somebody else on there that has, you know, some, you know, bad intentions, you know, I also want to be safe on that plane. So what people in general need to realize is that American Muslims, people living here, we just want to live the American dream. We just want to, you know, live our lives. We want to see our kids succeed. We don't want to get hurt. We don't want, you know, we need to understand that we are just like normal people with normal plans, going day, conducting our day-to-day business, trying to make ourselves a better people, a better community, give back to our country. That's it. That's what we're trying to do.
That's interesting. Zainab, why don't you leap in on that?
You know, Mark, I'm flabbergasted by comments like these. And the reason for that is because, you know, in 2016 alone, and I want to share this with your guest, in 2016 alone, toddlers have shot more people in the United States than Muslim terrorists have. Would we ban toddlers from entering the United States? White supremacists have shot more and killed more people in the United States in 2016 alone than Muslim terrorists. Would we ban white supremacists from coming to the United States? I mean, I think we have to look at the logic behind making these kind of blanket statements and compare that with the facts on the ground, with the statistics that we have, and kind of figure out, what are we thinking? Like, if we're going to, you know, target one particular community just based on their religion or based on their ethnicity or based on their, you know, physical appearance, their sexual orientation, and say that, no, you, because of that particular characteristic, you're going to be banned from entering our country. Is that like, something that's really accurate? Like, is that fair to that entire faith community, especially when we know that the larger part of the threat that our communities face here in the United States, that Americans face, is not even from that particular community. It's from an entirely different source. It completely boggles my mind that we now think that it's okay in America to generalize this way and say that an entire faith community should be singled out and banned from entering the United States, especially when that community has been part of our country since before its founding. It's been part of, you know, society. It's helped lay the foundation of our country. Muslims comprise up to 10% of doctors in the United States. I've spoken to doctors firsthand in places like West Virginia and Oklahoma who have migrated to the United States specifically because there was a severe shortage of doctors, and they were brought to these communities to serve as primary care physicians and specialists to help serve the needs of those particular neighborhoods and those towns. And they're seen as heroes, and they're Muslim. And, like, what are we thinking that it makes it okay for us to marginalize any group based on religion this way?
Very quickly, I do want to get back to the phones. A lot of people are calling in, but very quickly, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the reason why that's happening is, unfortunately, like, people like Donald Trump, because, you know, he, whatever emotions or feelings that you held, which I'm kind of surprised. I thought that, you know, with the election of someone like President Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, I'll even say that, okay, that, you know, we had surpassed something, you know, far greater than we had ever imagined, you know. And now, today, with all this stuff that's happening, you know, what Donald Trump has done is that he's infiltrated the minds of, you know, people who perhaps held bigoted or had semi-hated views, and now he's motivated them. You know what? It's okay. It's okay to come out. It's okay to come out and say, the guy with the brown skin and black beard or the woman who's wearing the hijab, that go ahead and, you know, make their life miserable. Now, you know, 15, 20 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case. You would have kept those feelings and emotions to yourself, even if you felt that way. But now the worst part of what Donald Trump has done is that he's motivated our society. The person that is sitting there, perhaps, you know, who's had a bad day, now he can blame the guy who's a Muslim and say, you know what, it's all actually because of him. That's why my life sucks.
Let me go back to the phones here. That's 410-319-8888. Your thoughts for our three guests, and Randy, you're on the air.
I just want to say, Mansoor, earlier in the program, made the clearest statement about the cause-effect dynamic that's going on. And I won't go back over that, but he gave just a very practical view of why some of this this mayhem is occurring. And I wish that to hear more from Mansoor. I think that he should definitely be on a speaker circuit. He should go to universities. He should be heard, and he should be really confident that his message is timely, important, And it's not the same old stuff that we hear from the journalists every day. But his is a bold statement, and it's honest. It's not like sectarian or anything like that. I think it's just a human to human kind of communication that we need. That's it. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
Randy, thank you for your thoughts. Appreciate that. I'm sure Mansoor appreciates it as well. And I think that's true. I think that all three of our guests bring really different perspectives, but that all that are coming equally important. And I think that ever since we saw what happened with the Khan family, more and more we need to hear voices like Mansoor Shams. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Lavana. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
This is a follow-up on the last woman caller. I am far more frightened as an American citizen by the activity of the Christian right than I am by any Muslim activity in this country. And I think what we need to do is seriously make a move to ban the immigration of all Christians into the country until we can sort them out a little better. I see Christians just in the name of their Christianity, and I don't believe they own that at all. But in the name of their Christianity, they're attacking all the different minorities in our country, and they're attacking the country itself when they engage in these terrorist acts. I think it's time to start labeling them as Christian terrorists, and any time there's a consideration of screening Muslim immigrants, then screen Christian immigrants. Of holding out Muslim immigrants, keep out the Christians till we can sort them all out.
I take that as a satirical comment. I'm not quite sure, but I think it's good. We need that kind of satire in our lives, I think, to kind of address hear what we're actually hearing. Let me throw out another issue here. That the front page of the New York Times today, and a number of the papers have had major articles about Ahmed Khan Rahami going back to Afghanistan to visit, going to Quetta as well, and allegedly being in contact with they're not sure. Are they saying the Taliban? They're saying Al-Qaeda. But you saw the same thing with the brothers, the older Chernoff brother, going back to Tajikistan and making that reference. And you heard the same thing earlier in another case with young Somalis who were stopped and then arrested by the FBI because they had made similar journeys or attempted to. Let me ask you all what you think about the reality of that is and how that plays into that. Because you know that's going to become a major part of this conversation. And Fahima, I'll let you start that.
Rahimi did, went back there, and of course he was radicalized. But the reason he went there, probably he was upset about something. I really don't know what was it, but he probably was not happy here. Probably he was profiled. He was, he had seen some hate in whatever the reason was. I come back to the issue of that instead of going around and bombing a country, we need to change the foreign policy. You know, we have spent about between $10 to $20 billion in Afghanistan. Because I'm from Afghanistan originally, I'm talking about Afghanistan, and that goes with Syria and Iraq and everywhere else. We spent that money on military. We put a corrupt government there who is not doing anything for the majority of the people. Or we support the Saudi government or the Pakistani government who are not doing anything for the people, but instead they are supporting fanatic religious groups. And we, as an American government, we do not really fight the ISIS or the fundamentalists or the Taliban there. We are spending money on the military, but we are not helping the people to change their life or have education or have health and have roads or have their children have a better life. We do not do that. Instead, we help the corrupt people. So So if we do not change our policy, people like Ahmad Khan will go back there and will be radicalized. People who are unhappy here, they will go there and radicalize and come back and hurt us here. So, it goes also for Somalia. We know the history of Somalia as well. One of the poorest countries, one of the corruptest countries in the world, you know, Somalia, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. So we go there and we tell them that we will bring democracy, but instead of democracy, we give them the gift of corruption and misery to the people. So that is where I am emphasizing that we need to help the people to have a better life. Once they have that, then madrasas, you know, camps would not send their kids to madrasas. Madrasas would not recruit terrorists or change, brainwash the kids to come here or to come anywhere to commit crime.
So, Zainab, I'll pick up that point in Mansoor as well before we go back to the phones here.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Zainab, but then we'll go right to Mansoor.
I was just going to point out that at this stage in the investigation, we still don't know many details. We know that Mr. Rouhani had traveled to Pakistan. They say he stayed there for 1 year before he returned, and they suspect that that's where he was radicalized. But I would just caution that at this stage in the investigation, there are a lot of details that are still not known, and speculating won't get us any of the answers. Truth be told, we really don't know what the motive was behind the bombings, and we don't really know much about Rouhani himself. I'm sure that our law enforcement agencies will do their due diligence, and we're urging them to also ensure due process and make sure that they get to the bottom of this and find out what happened. At this stage in the investigation, though, I don't feel that we have enough details to really comment accurately on what his motives were and why exactly he did what he did, if he is the suspect behind it, if he is the perpetrator behind it.
What were you about to say, Mansoor? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I was just, you know, going back again to just, I'd like to just try to keep things practical. You know, let's say in this particular situation that this guy was being cornered, this guy was being pushed around, you know, especially because of all the Islamophobia that's been going on in this country, and he, this is how he reacted. And this is what we need to do right now. We need to, again, sit back. We need to think, okay, where are we headed? Where are we going, okay? If you take anyone in a particular situation, let's say take myself, take yourself, imagine any one of us. You know, we've heard all these stories where someone was being bullied over and over and over and over again, and there's a trigger point. Now, what that person does in return is what's often remembered, okay? But what leads up to all that stuff, why that person did everything, which I'm not saying is justified. I'm just saying this is something that we need to think about. We need to think about the state of our country, the direction that we're heading in. You know, the Pope, you know, said several months ago that, you know, if someone said something about my mom, don't be surprised if I punch you in your face. Something of that nature. I don't want to misquote him, but, you know, it was something very practical. He said that, or slap you in your face or punch you in your face. So he was talking about in reference to when people make, you know, for example, you know, cartoons and, you know, having some basic level of respect of the Holy Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. If something is sacred to me, if something is special to me, don't come and, you know, push me around and put me in a corner and then not expect something in return. Again, the point is not that it's justified. The point is that we have to look at our behavior, because behavior, our way, our attitudes, the way we carry ourselves has an effect on the long-term, you know, result of something. So I don't know if in this, again, we don't have all the facts and all the realities, but, you know, I was flying yesterday and I'm going to be honest. You know, I was flying yesterday. I had two little kids with me. They were, you know, pretty cranky, you know, and, you know, right before the flight took off, my wife, who wears the hijab, she gets up and she, because the flight was delayed for a few minutes, she gets up and she goes and uses the restroom right before we take off. And there's two ladies sitting there, and they're just like clearly, blatantly, like just kind of shaking their faces, making these weird, you know, looks and stuff like that. And I'm not sure if it was because of her getting up as a human being and going to the bathroom, or it's because she happened to be wearing a hijab.
Right.
But right now, this day and age, what I feel like is the guy, I have a beard, okay, and, you know, she has a hijab on. I honestly feel, whether, and this is unfortunately the case, that even if the person's intent is something different, this is exactly how I feel. They're picking on me. Why? Because I have a beard and she has a hijab on. And that's a very, very sad state to be living in.
And I think Zainab, what before we have to break here, and I'll try to get one more caller in if we can. I mean, this is the complexity of it all. I think that what Mansoor describes happens daily. I've seen it myself with people who are clearly Muslim with the hijab or families together. I think that Fahima has made some really powerful points about our foreign policy and how it feeds into all of this. That's what I was trying to get to earlier about the complexity of all this. About how the complexity of this is something that I think we also have to wrestle with if we're going to kind of change hearts and minds in this country.
That's absolutely true, Mark. And you know, at this stage in the United States, at this point in time, Muslims are feeling more vulnerable and more anxious and more fearful than ever before. Even post 9/11, we did not see this kind of backlash or this kind of hostility against Muslims as we are now. And the nature of the attacks against our communities have become much more violent, in the sense that now, before where we would see threats and bullying and harassment, now we're seeing cold-blooded murders in daylight, in broad daylight, of an imam walking down the street in New York City, or of a older Muslim woman who wears a chador or like a scarf on her head, being stabbed during an evening stroll with her husband outside of her home in New York City. Just in Maryland alone, over the course of the last several months, we've seen a significant spike in hate crimes, bias attacks, incidents of profiling, Muslims being removed from planes, being discriminated against, being bullied and harassed, by not only by their peers, but also by educators. And all of these incidents, they contribute to this climate of uncertainty where, unfortunately, many Muslims are struggling to figure out what our place is in society and trying to reconcile our faith with our nationality as Americans. And that's the reality, unfortunately, of the times that we live in. But all of these contribute to that very complex kind of situation that we wholly, collectively, as Americans, find ourselves in trying to make sure that we maintain national security and protect public safety, but also maintain the rights and the safety and security of all Americans, regardless of their religion or their ethnicity or their race.
And I want to thank the three of you. This has been a great conversation. You just heard the voice of Zainab Chowdhury, who is Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Mansoor Shams is on the executive team of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community here in Baltimore, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and runs the website muslimmarine.org. Fahima Ghaiz, who is director of the Afghan Women's Fund. And thank the three of you so much. And maybe we in this country who are not Muslim Americans should be putting up signs saying Muslim brothers and sisters are welcome here. Thank the three of you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to look at what's been going on in Baltimore, picking up from yesterday's conversation, some of the violence that's taking place, and how a community is trying to wrestle with this and put their arms around it. We will stay with us for that conversation. We'll be right back.